remember when we first jumped out of the plane? No parachute. Sky full with our righteous screams cut through the din of the engine and our imagined sound of wind. As we fell, we refined our whoops and hollers. Sure, we knew something about flying the birds had missed. Inevitably, we calmed down. Realized we were still higher than any bird with a brain would fly. We were with the wind. The only noise was us. Finally, we fell silent and took in the view. Who knew we would have so far to fall? Just when I thought I had nothing more to say, that whatever I had would whirl off in our tempest of declarations, loss came through again, thrusting into my gut, pulling out the lives of loved ones, old friends and men lynched for being men. And when I thought I had nothing to tell you, the loss had to be filled, decried, beguiled, justified, vindicated, mourned, remembered, exclaimed over and over in a restless creche. We have something to tell you. Loss must be defied. A matter of survival. At the risk of smashing into the earth and leaving no mark.
Nothing makes sense. Chop chop makes sense.
This might sting a little.
Thank you. to go away, I will be impressed with you. As my eyes are closed, like your mother told you, you have migraines, and I'll just press your lips as the original image starts to fade.
To some, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much, but that's not true. They're testing out vowels and consonants and trying different sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on meaning, especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Schadenfreude. Schadifraud. Schadenfraud. Schadenfrude. 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 Schadenfreude. Schop, 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 schop.
Schadifraud.
Bottle, when it comes to the 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 bottle, when it com
Thank you. Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Lenore with your health tip of the day from the African American Wellness Project. While coronavirus infections could go down over the next few months, we're still headed into flu season. Millions of Americans will be affected by the flu. But the good news is that we do have a safe and effective vaccine. But sadly, too many people go unvaccinated, especially African Americans. For more about flu vaccine, talk to your doctor or visit aawellnessproject.org.
Here's a song all about my deep devotion and love to the banjo. Yeah, there's a lot of jokes about the banjo. Silver strings are really fun to play. I learned a lot of jokes about the banjo. I try to memorize a new one every day. I admit that the banjo isn't sexy. It makes all the pretty girls run away. I learned a thing or two about the banjo. Like the finest birth control is when you play. Oh, the world is full of jokes about the banjo. Some so bad they leave you in dismay. There's millions of jokes about the banjo. Here's a few to brighten up your day. What's the best way to tune a banjo? Wire cutters. You know, most banjo players spend half their career tuning and the other half playing out of tune. You know the difference between a banjo and a fish? You can tune a fish. How do you know the stage is level, John? Banjo player drools out of both sides of his mouth. What's the difference between a banjo and a yugo? You can tune a yugo. I know, most of you are going, what's a yugo? All the banjo players are going, what's tuning? What's the definition of an optimist? That's a banjo player with a pager. What do you say to a banjo player in a three-piece suit? Will the defendant please rise? Hey, Howard.
Yes, Michael.
What's the difference between a banjo and a puppy? Eventually, the puppy stops whining. What's the definition of a gentleman? It's someone who knows how to play the banjo, but doesn't. What does a banjo and a lawsuit have in common? Everybody feels better when the case is closed. How do you get a banjo player's eyes to sparkle? You shine a flashlight in his ears. How do you make a banjo player slow down, John? Put sheet music in front of him. Hey, Howard.
Yes, Michael.
Why are there no banjos in the movie Star Wars? Because it's the future. And finally, my favorite banjo joke of all. What do you call a beautiful woman on the arms of a banjo player? A tattoo.
there's a lot of jokes about the banjo. Silver strings are really fun to play. There's millions of jokes about the banjo. I memorize a new one every day. I admit the banjo isn't sexy. It chases all those pretty girls away. But one thing that I've learned about the banjo, the finest birth control is when you play. Well, the world is full of jokes about the banjo. Some so bad they leave you in dismay. There's millions of jokes about the banjo. I hope you enjoyed a few today.
WRCT Pittsburgh.
I have a number of things I want to go over with you today, and the first one is a really strange reason to oppose helping homeless people. This is just bizarre. In the state of Tennessee, they've been debating a bill dealing with homelessness. And in the midst of the debate, Republican State Senator Frank Nicely stood up. He's from Strawberry Plains, Tennessee. And he said, hey, you know what? Being homeless isn't the end of the world. Hitler was able to do things and make something of himself even after being homeless for a little while. Now, he's not saying killing Jews is good, but why do you go to Hitler as an example of someone who entered the history books after being homeless? It's bizarre.
Speaker, I haven't given you all a history lesson in a while, and I want to give you a little history on homelessness.
Please.
1910, Hitler decided to live on the streets for a while. So for 2 years, Hitler lived on the streets and practiced his oratory and his body language and how to connect with places, and then went on to lead a life that got him in the history books. So a lot of these people, it's not a dead end. They can come out of these homeless camps and have a productive life, or in Hitler's case, a very unproductive life.
God, I get he's not saying, you know, it was delightful. Hitler was homeless, and then he came out and he was able to kill 6 million Jews. I get that he's not saying that, but why do you have to point to Hitler? And also, if Hitler chose to be homeless in order to practice his oratory skills and body language, most homeless people are not trying to build public speaking skills by being homeless. Mention, you know, the singer Jewel at one point was really living in her car. She really was. Horrible backstory to it. Or actor Jim Carrey once lived in his car on his sister's front lawn, although that's not even really being homeless in the sense that a lot of people are homeless. Or why Hitler? And it's this very strange, it's not an obsession, but it's like, why are they thinking of Hitler so much to make positive points? And here the point is, listen, it's not that bad to be in these homeless camps. People can end up in the history books, even after being homeless. Look at Hitler. These people are very strange, and I think that there's something extraordinarily wrong with them. I want to talk about the latest grift scam from the Republican Party. There's a very good article in Truthout about this. Trump and Republicans are raking in millions of dollars with these fascist fundraising emails. Now, many of you have written to me about these emails. Many in our audience, they don't even know how they ended up on the Republican email list and on Trump's email list. Truthout's report is it's mind-blowing. Trump remains the highest-totaling fundraiser in the Republican Party. Experts say the fundraising emails fueling his political ambitions increasingly echo conspiracy theories and employ fascist rhetoric. That's true. I've seen them. Trump's fundraising emails helped generate $378 million in 2020, and there's $110 million in Trump's war chest as of a couple months ago. That's more than what's been reported by the RNC and DNC combined. The fundraising success suggests Trump's messaging resonates with many Republicans. Trump's deceptive fundraising emails are not just obnoxious. If you're a supporter, subscribe to Trump's email list, you're told sinister forces are destroying a nation that rightfully belongs to patriots like you. Only Trump can save America from humiliation. This is classic 20th century rhetoric. We don't have to say Hitler, because it's really more like Mussolini. It's really more like others. Some appeals appear to operate like a sweepstakes, letting you meet Trump in person or go to a top secret rally. Now, we've already talked before about how at many of these things, Trump's not there. There was one promoted as like have lunch with Trump, but only Lindsey Graham was going to be there. They also use language like Trump's inner friend circle, where a select few will be exposed to confidential information he won't trust other people with. And that is similar to the QAnon stuff. It's similar to these, you know, fights against elite cabals and so on and so forth. This is classic. This is a clinic in reactionary fear-mongering. We live in a society where so many people just freely will turn money over to rich people that openly despise them. And that is what we are seeing here. This is the giving culture where these reactionaries who Trump has spent, listen, guys, we've said it before. Trump, as a rich guy from New York, has spent his life trying to be kept away from the people that make up the bulk of his base, the people giving the small dollar donations, because that's all that they can afford at the end of the day. And it is what his campaign has been built on. Trump doesn't like these people, but he will grift them out of every last dollar. The emails are also really a study into cults. And I know I've said this before, but I've recently been reading about the Charles Manson cult. And when you read the interviews that the cult members would give to law enforcement when it all kind of fell apart, the language and the demeanor and the tone is so similar to that which we hear from Trump supporters today. And, you know, as I've said before, I don't want anyone getting scammed. I don't want anyone getting scammed. And at the same time, at what point do you say these people are determined to be scammed? They're determined to give Trump the money. They're falling for the fascistic rhetoric. They're doing all of it. I don't know. I don't know at what point we say we just kind of can't protect these people anymore. I don't know when we get there, but it seems like we're probably pretty close. Very quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but some people wrote to me again and they said, what is going on with the N-word being used by failed former President Donald Trump? This is starting to get really strange. I almost think Trump's trying to just appear to be provocative. Trump multiple times now has referred to nuclear or nuclear, depending on your pronunciation preference, as the N-word. And now he did it again at some kind of event. I don't know if this is a fundraiser or a party or what it is. Trump now saying, hey, everybody went crazy when I referred to nuclear as the N-word. Take a look.
We have the greatest nuclear force in the world. You don't want to do that. You know, I call it the N-word, okay? I said that to a group of people. They said, the N-word, oh, he said a horrible thing. I said, no, the nuclear word's what I thought. He said, oh, he said a horrible thing, the N-word. I said, no, the N-word is the nuclear word. The nuclear word is something that's not supposed to be discussed. You don't talk about it. You don't talk about it. But
why are people even clapping? Like, it is completely incoherent what he's saying, and people are clapping because Trump says you're not supposed to talk about the nuclear. What?
Putin's been talking about it. Yeah, he's a major country, a serious nuclear power, and he's talking about it.
Okay. So Trump now is referencing when he went on Fox News program. I don't even know what it's called. It's a program with Stuart Varney. It's called, I don't even know what the show is called. Stuart Varney's program on Fox Business. And he played the same kind of coy game.
Well, and hope to God you never have to use it, because it would be, that would be the tragedy of all tragedies. But if we didn't have it, we couldn't talk. But I listened to him constantly using the N-word. That's the N-word. And he's constantly using it, the nuclear word. And we never talk it. We say, oh, he's a nuclear power.
What do you guys think this is about? Is this some kind of a dog whistle where white supremacists, I'm making this up, by the way, guys. Is this a dog whistle where Trump is signaling to white supremacists, I can't go around using the real N-word, but I'm going to say the N-word and pretend I'm talking about nuclear, but I'm actually talking about the N-word. Is it a dog whistle that only some people understand? Is it Trump trying to just be provocative by using the term N-word, even if it has nothing to do with the actual N-word? I don't know what he's trying to do. It's very, very strange. One last bonus clip just about how weird things are that are going on lately. Here's Trump talking about when he met Matt Gaetz' wife. This was over the weekend, I guess, at Mar-a-Lago. It's just all very bizarre.
And I do remember when they met, he came up, I said, who the hell is that, Matt? Not that I noticed those things, but I said, who's that? I said, Matt, I don't know how well you get along, but assuming you get along, that's the one for you. And now it's you've come a long way together, haven't you? It's a great couple, and we appreciate it, and we love you both, and we're with you all the way.
Real weekend at Bernie's vibes starting to go there at Mar-a-Lago, but very strange. What's this N-word stuff about, guys? Let me know. I really don't understand it. You can find me on Twitter at dpacman. This is one of the last times I'm going to mention this because we're doing the event in a few days. Tuesday, April 19, 6 p.m., we're doing a town hall event. Town hall events are where you get to ask me questions. You get to berate me for whatever you want to berate me for. It's wide open. This will be streaming live. So if you want to listen to the town hall, it'll be live at 6 p.m. on the Pacman Live YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/PacmanLive. It won't be on the regular YouTube channel. It won't be on Facebook. It won't be on Twitch. It will only be at youtube.com/PacmanLive. Tuesday, April 19th, 6 p.m. If you want to call in, then it's going to be via Discord at davidpacman.com/discord. If you're not a member, everybody's welcome to call in. However, if you do become a member, we are going to have a priority path for you to get on the air for our paid members. Everybody will get an opportunity, but it'll be easier if you're a member, and you can sign up at joinpacman.com. So that's Tuesday, but still a full show of stuff coming up for you today. The David Pacman Show, of course, depends on your support through the membership program. We do an extra show every day for our members. You can sign up at joinpacman.com. We also have the upcoming David Pacman Show Town Hall on Tuesday, April 19th, and members will get priority access during the Town Hall, which is an amazing thing. But let's not wait. Let's hear from people right now. We take calls via Discord on Fridays at davidpacman.com/discord. And we are going to start today with John from Philly. John from Philly, you're on the air. John from Philly, please unmute yourself. You're on the air and you could talk to me if you unmuted. And last chance for John from Philly. Well, that's really too bad. That's not a particularly auspicious start. Let's put it that way. Why don't we go instead to Evan from, is it pronounced Harrogate?
It's Harrogate, David.
Harrogate. Welcome, sir.
No, thank you very much. I had a question just about kind of Argentine public opinion on the Falklands, if that's okay.
Sure.
It's kind of a three-part question, because I'm kind of, I don't really know how to get the public and sort of government opinion on the issue. So I was just kind of wondering, do you know what the kind of public opinion or what the government think is? What is your opinion? And it might not be analogous, but do you think there's any kind of Taiwan type analogy to it at this point or not?
I don't think that with the Falklands, there's much of a Taiwan analogy, at least that I would be able to articulate. But this is a good question. It's the 40-year anniversary of the Falklands War. The Falklands are these islands off the coast of Argentina. And I am from Argentina, and I know that people may expect me to have some particular hot take or maybe even a biased view because I'm from Argentina. I mean, listen, my understanding of public opinion in Argentina is that most Argentinians believe that the Falklands should be Argentinian. My view is that's not at all clear to me. If you look at the history, I don't know the full history of the Falklands, but you can definitely find periods in the hundreds of years ago where different populations were there to say who controlled it. I just am not enough of a student of it to say. But to me, go ahead.
I think it was French originally, and then it was kind of abandoned for a while, and then it was kind of flicked between Spanish and majority British sort of.
Yeah. And so listen, for me, sometimes you'll see Argentinian soccer matches and people unveil flags that say the Falkland Islands are Argentinian and stuff like that. For me, it's an unusual hill to look to die on. I recently saw, because of the anniversary, on Argentinian news, they brought like three veterans from that, three Argentinian veterans. And the framing of the entire segment was like, obviously the islands are Argentinian, when it's like not at all clear from history that that's the case. And I know that people on both sides will make very strong arguments. I think it's politically ambiguous at best.
Yeah, fair enough. I think because one of my friends works in the oil industry out there, I think if you have the Falkland stamp on your passport, you're not allowed to go to Argentina.
That may be still the case. That's similar to, if that's the case, that's similar to, there are Middle Eastern countries where if you've been to Israel, you're not allowed to go in. That reminds me of that. There's one other historical note I would mention. At the time, 40 years ago, when this war took place, it was very stupid to think that Argentina was going to be able to beat the UK in a war. Like, obviously that wasn't going to happen. And there was a very cynical nature with which there was propaganda value to appearing or attempting to fight this war because of what was going on in Argentina at the time, starting to get out of this military dictatorship government and this type of thing. And so a lot of people would look at it and say, it seemed really stupid to think that Argentina's military could fight the UK's, and it was. And the reason was it had propaganda value to some degree.
All right, okay. Cool. Well, yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, good. I figured at some point someone would ask about that because of the timing, and someone did. Let's go to our friend Bitdefender from Cancun, Mexico. This is not Eric from Cancun. This is a different Cancun caller who goes by Bitdefender. Bit, you're on.
Hello, David.
Hello.
I hope you're well. I wanted to talk about something that happened in Mexico that I think some Americans ought to know, just in case something similar happens in the States.
Okay.
So the 10th of April, we had a special election of sorts, Elección de Revocación de Mandato, which is essentially an election where you go to vote to get rid of the president.
Is it almost it's almost like a no confidence vote of the people, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now it sounds sort of democratic, but the reality of it is that it's something that mostly exists in autocratic countries and countries that, well, leaders that want to campaign constantly. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Especially in countries that pretend or have democratic systems that, you know, have electoral law of sorts, but you very well know that the elections are not fair and free.
Sure.
You know, Venezuela, Ecuador, some other Latin American countries have this form, and now Mexico has it. Given the rise of these forms of, you know, government and governors, do you think we will see something similar in the States?
I don't think so. I think it would be how presidential elections run, at least in theory, is so set in stone that I don't believe that there's going to be the putting in the instatement of such a mechanism. And also, you know, as you point out, one of the ideas of it, the propaganda value of it, is that you can kind of constantly be running an election, and that can sometimes help to coalesce and organize people. The Republican Party has already figured out how to do the same thing by saying Democrats are going to try to steal it, which is what they did in 2020. And so they already kind of have a mechanism to make that rallying cry. So no, I don't expect that to be instated in the United States.
Also, now that you mention it, when, you know, given the nature of electoral law in the States, what gives you so much confidence that, you know, electoral law is so set in stone? You know, me coming from a country where we have an actual federal institute dedicated to electoral management, and the States don't really have one, you know?
Uh, I mean, I don't, maybe I'm naive to think that, but the only real sense I have is that if anything was going to structurally change the way elections are done, it would be something like the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, where states can decide.
And
we'll just give our electors to the winner of the popular vote. But beyond that, there's not really any serious initiatives there. I mean, they're trying to steal it by not officially changing the big picture, but by doing voter suppression at the state level, strategic voter ID, closing polling places. They're looking to do it piecemeal rather than with any big mechanism like a public no confidence voter, that type of thing. It's just what they're doing. So I'm basing it on what I see.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's about it. Thank you, dude.
All right. Thank you. There's Bitdefender from Cancun. Let's go next to Phil from California. Phil, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, David. I had a question about propaganda in general.
Okay.
And it seems like with propaganda, it seems to have an origin where there's a voluntary actor who kind of promulgates the initial idea of propaganda and disperses it. But at what point does the propaganda become like a feedback loop and people that are propagating it also are consuming it and falling for it?
Oh, it happens very quickly. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to just say, for example, it seems like Putin may have fallen for his own propaganda with his initial attack on the Ukraine, and how poorly his army performed was probably partially to believe in his own propaganda about liberating Ukraine, and that he'd be welcome with open arms.
I'm not sure about that. I don't think Putin was that naive, but I think your principle is very much there. I see it much more like in the current Republican Party, where I see it the other way, where it's sort of the people that fell for the Trump is really the winner propaganda end up spreading it, and then they end up believing it because people they've convinced start repeating it themselves. So that's the feedback loop that I've seen. I don't know that the Putin example, I don't know how sure I am of the Putin example, but your idea is absolutely spot on.
Thank you, David.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the call. A nice concise call there. Let's go next to Stephanie in Texas. Stephanie, you're on the air. Stephanie in Texas, you're on the air. Please unmute and you'll be able to talk to me.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me? Hi.
Yes, I can.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
And I owe you an apology. Actually, I tried calling a couple months ago and I got so excited that instead of unmuting my call, I hung up on you. So I apologize for that.
Oh, no.
So anyway, and I also wanted to just let you know that we're not all crazy here in Texas, but good. Just how crazy are things in Texas right now? And I wanted to ask you, thank you for the, you did a piece on the murder charges being dropped against a woman who tried to seek an abortion.
Yes.
And I, you know, there's a lot of things I could, there's a lot of things I'm trying to like, you know, to ask you about, because there's a lot of things going on here right now, but that's one of the ones I think that's really first and foremost. And do you think that that's something that my hope is it'll lose steam over